Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try Assemble and Bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
So by resisting comfort, we have the same mindset going into the weight room. We have the same mindset in the offseason when coaches aren't around and coaches can't do anything for you. So we have some great leaders in the locker room who are returning, and they are now going to lead the next group of guys to make sure we are resisting comfort and looking to build on the success that we had this past season.
And our guest this week is Mohamedou Kaba. He is the head men's basketball coach at Division III Delaware Valley University in Doylestown. His squad, coming off a MAC Freedom title, went to the NCAA tournament this past season. Mohamedou, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
So, as we're talking here, we're a little more than a month removed from the end of your season. Have you had enough time, enough distance to kind of completely take a deep breath, look back, catalog the good, the bad, what you guys were able to accomplish, where the program goes from here, or is that an ongoing process?
I would say it's always ongoing, but definitely believe that we just had enough time to enjoy what we experienced this past season and appreciate what we did accomplish. It was a special year for myself, our coaching staff, our players, something that everyone worked really hard for. And to be able to accomplish your goals is special. So, you know, we're definitely appreciative of that. And, you know, we look back and reflect on it, but just definitely also trying to move forward and, you know, trying to build on that success.
Played some of your best basketball at the end of the year, which is obviously the right time to turn it on. Was there a point in the season where you felt like things changed with the group, that they maybe gelled or the light bulb went off on some things you were looking for? Or they just took their game to another level?
I wouldn't say there was a particular moment. I think during that last stretch of the season, you know, every game we started to build more and more confidence. So it wasn't just a moment that turned everything around. But, you know, with every game, that confidence grew stronger and stronger. And I would say, you know, probably the last week of the season after we beat the number one seed in Stevens on the road, you know, we felt that we had, you know, the makings to win a championship because they had been so dominant in conference play. And they were really the only team that we hadn't beaten at that point in the season. And then going into the playoffs, we had all the confidence in the world. And it just grew from there.
One of the things, like looking through your schedule, as you guys win at the end of the year, I think your last three wins, including the two wins in the conference tournament, were like a combined 9 points. So we're talking white knuckle time almost start to finish. Right. You were down 9 in the championship game, right, at halftime?
Yes.
What does that say, not just about you, but about the group? Because it shows me a team that learned how to win, how to figure it out in the moment, grind through. And I think that's something that you and all coaches, you can only do so much. Kids got to go out there and make the plays. They've got to make the right decisions. Like, what did the team prove to you about learning how to win down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, we experienced a lot of heartbreak early on in the season. It was tough early because we were losing games by 1 or 2 points early on. We had a couple buzzer beaters that didn't go our way. So we had to learn how to recover from those games. And I'll be honest, as a coach, I was concerned about, you know, if we were able to recover from some of those heartbreaks, will we be able to, you know, move forward, or will we go the other way? Because it had been a tight race all season in the conference. And luckily, you know, our guys were able to have the mental fortitude to just continue to work, continue to believe in our coaching staff and what we were preaching. And ultimately, at the end, we were able to win all of those games that we struggled to win early on in the season. So, you know, it was tough going through it at the time, you know, losing like that. But it definitely helped us, especially in the most important time of the season.
Yeah, it's kind of my next question. Do you think you make the run at the end? You do, if you don't have to overcome that adversity early?
No, I don't. Like you said, you know, the players are out there and we try and coach them on the situations. We try and simulate it in practice. But until you're in it, you're not really sure what to do in those moments, especially with anxiety. The pressures of the game are different. But to be able to make free throws down the stretch, you know, for instance, we had a kid, Jake McGinty, on our team who, you know, had two free throws to win the game at Jersey City in the third game of the season. We were down one. He had two free throws. He missed them both. And we lose that game in heartbreaking fashion. And then we have a playoff game where we're struggling. We miss about eight or nine free throws in a row. And he steps up, right? And we're only up 1 point. And he goes and makes both free throws where we're up three, and then we ultimately foul and win that game. But, you know, for him to recover from, you know, missing two free throws that could have potentially won us a game, but he made it in the most important time of the season. And that's what made the season so special, was those guys were able to recover from some of those tough moments.
What was the NCAA tournament experience like? You guys played a phenomenal Wesleyan program in the first round, lost 72-50. But what was just the, from winning the championship to the selection show, to kind of having the spotlight, the travel, what was the whole thing like for you and for the group?
Yeah, I know I keep going back to the word special, but that's what, you know, I can use to describe it. You know, we were able to get up there and, you know, have the full experience of having a walkthrough or practice and, you know, being at Wesleyan's facility, which is beautiful. And our guys were able to just see, you know, what it looks like to compete at the national level. Wesleyan had been number one in the country. You know, they brought a different level of size, physicality, athleticism that we hadn't seen all season. So for our guys, we were able to see that. And, you know, we have something to work towards now. You know, we have seen the things in the MAC Freedom for so long. But to be able to experience that just gives you a little bit more motivation on, you know, how far your game can also go.
So now what's the discussion with the group going forward? Because now the dynamic changes. Now you are the team, the defending champs. You're the team that everybody's going to circle
right
on the calendar now. Like,
right,
is there a conversation with the players that are coming back that, you know, we have to maybe approach things? I don't want to say differently, but there has to be an idea that we're not going to sneak up on everyone. Everyone's going to want to knock us off. Is that something you talk with the group about?
Yeah, absolutely. The motto here in the offseason is to resist comfort. You know, something that I heard from Mike Tomlin, a guy who's been as consistent of a coach in the country in all sports. And he talks about resisting comfort. And that's been the message, right? So we're not looking at the season and saying, hey, we can relax now. We can just go back to our bad habits. You know, we're just trying to continue to stay motivated, keep the standard where it is, and build on that. So by resisting comfort, we have the same mindset going into the weight room. We have the same mindset in the offseason when coaches aren't around and coaches can't do anything for you. So we have some great leaders in the locker room who are returning, and they are now going to lead the next group of guys to make sure we are resisting comfort and looking to build on the success that we had this past season.
How has the landscape changed for you in college basketball? NIL at the Division III level, much more the transfer portal. Like, has it changed how you approach recruiting, putting things together? Are you very active in the portal? Do you try to, I don't think you can avoid it, but not use it as much right as maybe some other programs? How have things changed over your time as a head coach and your time in coaching as well?
Yes, absolutely. It has changed a lot. You know, being at East Stroudsburg, we did everything from the ground up. We recruited a lot of freshmen. And when you have those guys who stay, your program just is able to sustain success, and everyone knows what the standard is. But now with everyone changing, it's a lot harder to just, you know, keep that standard the same because you have so many new faces. So for us, you know, Del Valle is a unique place. We've been able to recruit some freshmen. Some have not been able to stay, you know, whether it's the university or, you know, the surroundings. So we've been able to, you know, mix in some freshmen and some transfers as well, just to, you know, mitigate some of the losses we've had with some experienced guys who have moved on to other places. So the landscape is different. You know, we all have to adjust to it. I think the adjustment has been in our favor because we've been able to get some really talented players, guys who transfer in, like Antonio Redding. You know, he was at Lebanon Valley, transferred in. If there's not a transfer portal culture, maybe he stays. But, you know, we get a guy who ends up being player of the year. A guy like Mike Heron, who was our second leading scorer, you know, was at Rosemont College. You know, he also transferred in, and he was able to make an impact right away. So, and then we have guys who have been in the program since their freshman year, like Kamal Johnson. You know, he came in with a class of five guys. He was the only one who stayed for whatever reason. He continued to believe and get better, and he was a starter on a championship team, right? So we've been able to do it different ways, but with the culture how it is, I think, you know, it makes it tough to retain maybe your entire team, but you might be able to get better quickly.
So now let's dig into your backstory. What's your earliest basketball memory growing up?
My earliest basketball memory, I would have a bucket in my apartment. My brothers and I, we would just have the bucket at the end of the hallway and just shoot there. That's my earliest basketball moment, and I love the NBA. My dad's a fanatic, and he watches every sport. I remember watching cartoons, and my dad would come in. We had one TV. He would cut off the cartoon and make me watch basketball, and that's how I fell in love with it. And, you know, just spending a lot of time playing at the park and just trying to become a better player, be a student of the game. You know, I love learning about players. You know, in school, I did a lot of assignments on players in the NBA. So I've just always had a joy for basketball, and I've always loved it since, you know, I would say I was about 6 or 7 years old.
Was basketball always the number one sport for you when it came to playing and everything? Like, everything else was a distant second?
Yeah, it's always been number one. Again, my dad's a fanatic, so we were able to watch a lot of sports. So I played a little soccer. I played football for a couple years. I played baseball as well. So I love all sports. Basketball has just always been the one that I've enjoyed the most. But I would say my experience in all those sports allowed me to just be a student more so than anything, kind of, you know, see the similarities in football and baseball and soccer to basketball. And, you know, I always try and draw from those experiences when I talk to our team. You know, maybe I'll make an analogy about a football team, because at Del Valle, like, we want to be physical. So, you know, I'll explain to our guys, hey, we want to make this a football game. We'll use those type of analogies. But basketball has always been number one, and, you know, that's kind of what led me to coaching.
What is it about the game that you fell in love with? There has to be something specifically about the game, especially at a young age, that really just captivated you and drew you in.
Yeah, I would say at the time, it's about the stars. It's no secret that the basketball players are, you know, especially in this country, are the biggest stars, even though football is a bigger sport. So, you know, being drawn to guys like Michael Jordan at a later age, I didn't watch him in the 90s, but you knew who he was. He was a rock star. So watching him play, guys like Allen Iverson, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal's from New Jersey. So I was taught early to root for guys from, you know, that come from where I come from. So I think the stars drew me to it. And then, you know, being able to do some of the things that they do, right? Obviously at a lower level, but going to the park and trying to emulate that was a lot easier than, you know, finding a group of guys and playing football, or going to, you know, a baseball field and emulating that. So I would say I just found that I related to those guys the most, and that's probably what drew me to it the most.
When along this journey do you start to realize you're pretty good at basketball? And it's not just love, but that you can maybe do things that other kids can't, and you're getting maybe a little more attention than other kids.
Yeah, I mean, my journey has been unique with that as well. I was never really a talented player, so I always had to work for everything. I always had to prove myself because I wasn't overly athletic. Growing up, initially, you know, I was able to shoot the ball pretty well. I was really skinny. But I would say when I was in ninth grade, that was I had the first coach that believed in me as a player. And I won the most outstanding player on my freshman team. And then going into sophomore year, you know, I was able to play a bigger role. And then by the time I was a senior, I was a leader. I was a leading scorer on a team that, you know, won a championship in high school. So that was pretty special. And even the college journey, I had a lot of Division III's in New Jersey that were recruiting me. But I wanted a different experience. I don't think I'm the person I am today if I'd like to go to one of those state schools there, just because it was going to be close to home. I don't think I would have grown as a person. And Justin Paz from East Stroudsburg, I remember him giving me a call and said that they had an opportunity for me to be a preferred walk-on redshirt, and you never know what happens. And I took that chance and met with Coach Wilson, was able to redshirt my first year, be a part of a winning program, and earn a scholarship and be a part of winning at, you know, the highest level. Honestly, we went to 3 NCAA tournaments. We were number 2 in the country when I was a junior, was able to start games as a senior. So I always had to prove myself, and that's probably why, you know, I continue to resist comfort even as a coach, because I know at any moment, you know, someone else can take the opportunity that I would want.
How big was the redshirt year for you, just as far as getting acclimated to college and adjusting to being away from home, stuff like that?
Yeah, it was big. for me, I wasn't developed physically, so I needed that year. You know, I was 17 when I had my first class at East Stroudsburg because I was born in August. So that year helped me develop physically. Academically, I had a strong start, and then I struggled, you know, as you try to balance all of the things that come with college. So being able to have that year transition before I was in the heat of things as a student athlete was really helpful for me. You know, as I mentioned before, you know, being from East Orange, New Jersey, and going to East Stroudsburg was different for me. And I needed that to grow as a person professionally, socially. So that fresher year definitely helped with that. And then along the way, I was just able to continue to balance all of those things as well.
It being different, was it ever overwhelming that first year? Because I remember I couldn't wait to go to college, away to college. Yeah. It's going to be great. And I was almost in tears the first week because I was so lonely. Like, and it completely, nothing in my life has hit me more blindsided than that because it was not on my radar. How was it for you? Was it what you thought, or did it take some real adjustment internally to get used to?
Yeah, I would say once I started to play, it became overwhelming. In the beginning, you know, I was redshirting, so I was just more in practice. I had time because I didn't travel to games and anything and whatnot. So when I started to play in games and I had to balance being a full-time student athlete, and then I was a math education major. So the math part and the computer science part became a challenge for me. And that's when I became overwhelmed because, you know, I love spending time in the gym, but I also had to spend all this time learning, you know, some of the things I needed to for my math education degree. And that's where, you know, I had a breakthrough around my sophomore, junior year where I was able to get some help and balance my schedule a lot better and then just spread out my classes. Since I redshirted, I had just planned on graduating in 5 years. Initially, you know, you come in, try and graduate in four and see if you can start a master's program. But I knew I had to balance some things a lot better. And once I got to year two or year three, you know, I was able to do that pretty well.
Did you love math, or was it just something that you were good at that fit with what you wanted to pursue?
Oh, man, I love math. I'm a nerd about it. I love puzzles. I love just figuring out equations and learning different things. And I think that's also where my joy from coaching comes from as well. But yeah, I was good at math at a young age. And then once I decided that I was going to coach basketball, I knew being a math teacher was in the realm of possibilities. So I explored that. I knew that was a, you know, a job that was in high demand. So, you know, I felt comfortable with going that route. But, you know, I definitely enjoy math. I still try and do some math equations just to stay sharp and just have fun with it. But yeah, that's kind of how it kind of unfolded for me.
Use analytics a lot?
Yeah, we do. We do use analytics a lot. And we use it a lot more this year where we use it to guide our decisions, right? They don't just make the decisions for us, but some of the stats that don't show up, you know, in the box score, you know, whether it's deflections, charges, turnovers forced, some of those other things. And we try and use that to give our players information on how we try to make decisions, right? How can you impact the game outside of the box score, outside of points, rebounds, assists? And it definitely helps our guys understand that there's more to it than, you know, the stats that everyone sees.
You kind of referenced this in the answer before about like figuring out an equation kind of helping you coaching. And I would, it's not something I think would be reflexive that you would think, but you think about, you're trying to put pieces together. You're trying to figure out and get to the right answer, you know, but instead of doing it in a calculus equation, you're doing it with a roster, with a team, with a locker room. It does, I would imagine, help just with thought process and working through things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was an eighth grade math teacher. I probably didn't talk about this part of my journey. When I graduated, I went back to my hometown and I taught eighth grade math. And, you know, at that age, everyone's always asking, when am I going to use this in real life? And they're always trying to find an excuse as like to, you know, go away from whatever the subject matter is. So, you know, we turn math class into a class about figuring things out. I forget how you just it described it, but just processing things, problem solving. Right. So that's how we termed it. It's like, hey, this isn't just about the equation. It's about solving a problem and how many different ways you can solve that problem. And they were able to embrace that as eighth graders, luckily. So then they wouldn't ask me every time, when am I going to use this in real life, even though we had those real life equations in there. And that's how it applies in basketball, just trying to find different ways to problem solve, whether it's on the court, off the court. And that's why I'm thankful for my math background. I think it definitely has, you know, contributed to, you know, my coaching style.
As an aside, how was the experience teaching eighth grade math? Because as a first teaching experience, I don't know that you could find an age group that's more challenging right. than that junior high heading into high school, hormones going nuts, kids trying to figure out who
absolutely,
they are.
Absolutely.
Like, what was just the experience like for you?
Yeah, it was a challenge, honestly. You know, I was fresh out of college, too, so they knew I was young. They would ask me every day how old I was. So that was always funny. But, you know, I had to learn how to manage a classroom. You know, when I was student teaching, it was easy because those teachers had already established, you know, their routine. You know, everyone knew what the rules were. So I was just coming in, just teaching. Right now, when I started as an eighth grade teacher, I had to learn, how can I manage my classroom? Right. How can I set rules and standards in place where everyone knows what the routine is when they walk in? And I had forgotten that piece early. And especially with eighth graders, they need rules. They need standards. If not, you know, they're always trying to bend things. They're always trying to see how far they can get away with certain things as well. And once I was able to realize that and set those standards, you know, it helped the rest of the school year kind of, you know, run pretty smoothly. And then, you know, now having the opportunity to be a head coach, that was the first thing I thought about was that experience, right? Setting those rules, setting those standards that everyone follows, and there's no gray area, or you want to limit the gray area. So once everyone knows what the standards are, they understand what to expect, things are pretty seamless.
Time for a break. We will continue our conversation with Mohamedou Kaba in just a couple of minutes. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HR-V. Contact your local Honda dealer today. See dealer for financing details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Delaware Valley University head men's basketball coach Mohamedou Kaba. Getting back to your playing days, what are your favorite memories of playing hoops at East Stroudsburg?
I would say my freshman year or my second year, winning the first conference championship in Coach Wilson's head coaching career. I think we had gone 22 years or 20 years, something like that, without winning a championship. So that was special. You just saw the president, the university just get behind us. And, you know, we ended up winning at Westchester University. And just the excitement around campus was incredible. And then my junior year, we were 30-2. We were number two in the country. That's probably the most special moment. I mean, you know, for everyone on the team, you felt like rock stars around campus. You go around town, people know who you are. You know, the community. The first year was more about the campus community when we won that championship. The second time was about the entire East Stroudsburg community really coming to games. And I remember teaching, you know, I remember having like student teaching assignments and students talking about coming to the games, right? They have no connection to East Stroudsburg. So that was really special just because we won a lot of games. We had a lot of fun. We ended up going to the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament and hosting a region in the NCAA tournament, which hadn't happened at East Stroudsburg. So that entire time was, you know, really special, and it was a lot of fun.
So what's the door opening to coaching? What's your on-ramp to getting your first job?
So once I graduated from East Stroudsburg, I went back, and I was an eighth grade teacher, and I volunteered as an assistant freshman and varsity coach with Billy Lovett, who's now the assistant coach at Siena for women's basketball. So he was a really good coach, and I learned a lot from him. And then I ended up being a volunteer assistant coach 15U for the New Jersey Roadrunners. And anyone who knows the New Jersey Roadrunners, it's a historic AAU program in New Jersey. People like Kyrie Irving, Shaheen Holloway, Al Harrington, the Hurleys, anyone who's legendary in New Jersey played for the New Jersey Roadrunners. So it was special to be a part of that program. And shortly after I became a volunteer assistant, the head coach ended up stepping away. So I got bumped up as a head coach. And Sandy Pione, who's the face of the New Jersey Roadrunners, had a lot of belief in me. I wasn't sure if I was ready to take that on for a legendary program, but he gave me all the confidence in the world, and we had success. You know, we won two tournaments. We were really competitive, and it just gave me confidence that, you know, I knew what I was doing, right? Again, you try and seek validation, and winning championships against other really good programs, you know, helps with that. So right after our AAU season was over, I had the opportunity to go back to East Stroudsburg as a graduate assistant. I was a graduate assistant for about 2.5-3 months. Again, our full-time assistant coach in a similar situation as the Roadrunners ended up taking a job as a Division I assistant. So I was bumped up, obviously, on short notice. And, You know, credit to Coach Wilson. He had a lot of confidence in me, especially because he coached me. He probably knew what my approach was and my mindset and that I would work hard. And he gave me the opportunity to show that I was deserving of the job. And that year, we won 18 games, but, you know, I worked hard enough and he believed in me enough to give me the full-time position. And from there, you know, we had a lot of success. We ended up going to the Elite Eight in 2018. You know, we won the conference title twice, regular season champions. We had a player of the year. We had a freshman of the year. We had a bunch of all conference players and people that played overseas. And then ultimately from that, you know, I had applied for some jobs, but Delaware Valley opened up and, you know, I applied for that. And, you know, I was able to get the opportunity to be the head coach at Del Valle.
When you come back to East Stroudsburg, were there any players on the roster that were there when you were still playing, or was there enough distance where everybody had moved through the program?
Yeah, so I was only a year removed. So when I got back, I would say close to half the team I played with. And I was a captain for a year at East Stroudsburg. So they already viewed me as a leader, you know, and that transition wasn't hard. A lot of people always ask, how was it coaching your teammates? And honestly, coaching my teammates was easier than coaching the new guys. I didn't have to prove myself to my teammates. They knew what I was about. But the new guys, they needed to get a feel for me because I didn't recruit them. They didn't know if they could trust me or not. So coaching my teammates were awesome. I was able to, you know, confront them about things. I was able to be a lot harder on them because we had that relationship. And then once those other guys saw that, you know, we had that kind of relationship and I got some validation from them, it allowed me to coach them as well and became pretty easy after that.
What was the toughest thing you had to learn, get used to as a coach?
As an assistant, as a head coach?
Coaching in general.
Coaching in general. Initially, I would say it was about, you know, setting those rules and standards initially, right? Trying to be fair to everyone, you know, being organized, being on top of things. I was just really intentional about that because, you know, if I don't know what I'm doing, if I'm not organized, if I'm not on top of my game, it's very noticeable and players will go the other way, right? So I focused on that. I would say the hardest thing for me was when I transitioned as a head coach. And in that transition, you know, learning how to be the bad guy. So as the assistant coach, you know, you're the confidant for all the players. You're their emotional support. The relationship is so important. And you never have to make the decisions that are tough, right? And Coach Wilson has always said this, you know, when you go down one seat, it gets a lot harder, right? You have to make the decisions. When I was an assistant, I just had suggestions. And my first few years at, you know, Delaware Valley, I just thought I could have the same relationship and be the head coach. And I just couldn't because I was making some tough decisions, whether it's who to play, who not to play, and those type of things. And you could see that it fragmented some of those relationships. And I had to become comfortable with that. I had to become comfortable with players, you know, deciding that they weren't going to come and confide in me. They couldn't be as open to me because it was tougher for them to do that because they knew that I was the head coach and they didn't want me to view them in that certain light where it would affect my decision. Even though I tried to assure them that it wouldn't, it was just a challenge. And I would say, you know, this is the first year where I've become a lot more comfortable with that. And ultimately, you know, when you win, you have success. And when guys are further removed from it, they understand all of the things that you had to do.
So you talk about the Del Valle job coming open. Were you at a point where you were openly looking, like you were in the headspace that I feel like I am ready? Or does the opportunity, you hear about the opportunity and you start to think, well, you know, might not have to move, you know, head coach, good program. Like, what was it, one or the other or a little bit of both?
I would say a little bit of both. Initially, I wasn't sure if I was ready, but, you know, Coach Wilson, he knew what my goals were. And once he felt like I was ready, he supported me and he pushed me. So I had applied for some jobs prior to Del Valle. So, you know, I had some experience interviewing and getting some feedback on what I was missing. And when Del Valle opened up, again, he told me that he thought I was ready and that it was a job that I should go for. And once we saw the location and everything like that, and you don't want to be tied to location per se, but, you know, it worked out pretty perfectly. So I attacked that job. I definitely wanted it. Our AD, Dave Duda, is a basketball guy. You know, I recruited his son to East Stroudsburg. So, you know, I was in some ways interviewing in front of his son for 2 years. And I'm sure his recommendation definitely helped me, you know, get the position at Del Valle. But, you know, I always felt like I could be ready. But to get that support from our head coach, Jeff Wilson, who knows what it looks like, meant the world to me. And it gave me more confidence that I was ready to take that step.
And you talk about the difference moving one seat over.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to become comfortable with things like talking to the officials? How to, I don't want to say conduct yourself, but how to handle walking the sideline and stuff like that, because it's a different dynamic than when you're Absolutely. The assistant. Like, was it something that came natural to you, or was it a little awkward at first finding your pace?
I would say it came pretty natural to me. I try and feed off of our players. So if our players need intensity, if the other coach is trying to get the official to, you know, call things their way, I'll get more involved. But I try not to allow that to you know, get me off my game as a coach. You know, ironically, you bring that up because we just won the Schoenfeld Sportsmanship Award, and that's tied to, you know, our program and our class and how we treat officials. But I remember my first year at Delaware Valley, and we had a home game, our first home game, and we wanted to win that really badly, right? My first year as a head coach, and we want to try and win. Again, I keep talking about the validation piece. And we're up 10 at halftime, and then in the second half, the lead starts to slip away from us. And I'm becoming more emotional. I'm being uncharacteristic of myself. I'm losing my composure. And when I went back and watched the film, as I started to act that way, our players started to act that way. And as a head coach, I wanted to be intentional about my body language as well, because I know what kind of impact that has on a player, whether they miss a shot, whether they turn the ball over. So I try and stay even keeled as much as possible. But, you know, once we lost that game, I had to go in the locker room and own that. So I told them that loss was on me, and that I would never allow that to happen again, where my body language and my composure gets lost and it costs us a game. And that kind of led us to this year where, you know, no matter what the heartbreak was, no matter what the situation was, we stayed even keeled. You know, our motto, especially late in the year, was don't flinch. And I think it helped us when we were in those pressure situations down the stretch, and we were able to capitalize and find a way to win.
So you went to the NCAA tournament this year. You mentioned a lot of success at East Stroudsburg NCAA tournament. Does that kind of success hit differently as a coach than it did as a player?
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely does. You know, when I played at East Stroudsburg, I had a smaller role. You know, I played in a lot of games, but, you know, hovered anywhere around 10 to 15 minutes a game throughout my career on average. So as a coach, and when you're the leader, right, you have to lead everyone to that championship, right? Everything starts from the off season and trying to build it up to get to that point. It just felt a lot more special, to be honest with you. And maybe I feel that way because I feel like I'm a bigger part of it, or maybe because, you know, just seeing everyone else's excitement and all the joy that you were able to bring to other people in your program, you know, makes you feel a lot better that you were able to help them, you know, achieve that level of success. You know, we had assistant coaches that had never gone to the NCAA tournament. We had seniors that put so much work into it and had to believe and had to go through a season where we were 8-17. And for them to reach the pinnacle of the conference and win the championship, I think that's what I was most happy about, right? So, you know, you have a lot of joy when other people around you and other people in your organization have joy. And that's probably what made it feel a lot more special.
Do you have a game day routine?
Me in particular, not really. I don't have a particular game day routine, I wouldn't say. No.
Which resonates more with you? Love to win or hate to lose?
Hate to lose. Hate to lose for sure.
Why?
I feel like when I lose, I allow my opponent or whoever to have the one up on me, bragging rights or whatever it is. So I'm just trying to stay afloat for as long as possible. So that's really the mindset. And if I stay afloat for as long as possible, I think I'm able to separate myself eventually, right? It's just more about who's going to buzz first, who's going to quit first, and I believe myself to not be a quitter. So as long as I don't lose, I always feel like I will win in the long run.
What's your favorite part of the job?
I would say, as I mentioned before with the championship, is seeing the joy you can bring everyone else. People travel far and wide to play basketball, to play college basketball, to get that opportunity, to, you know, get a degree. So when they end up crossing the stage and graduating after all the adversity they went through, or when they win a championship or win all conference, and you see the joy that you were able to bring to someone else, that's the thing that, you know, I really can't describe. Like, I would say that's my favorite part of the job by far.
Is there one part of the job that if someone came to you and said, you will never have to worry about this again? Somebody, we will take it off your plate. It will be handled, but it will be handled by somebody else that you won't have to worry about. It'll be done well.
Right.
Is there a part of the job you would, in a perfect world, just love to delegate and not have to worry about anymore?
I wouldn't say so. I monitor study hall at Del Valle. You know, we don't have a full-time assistant coach or anything like that. So I enjoy just being in it academically. I was a teacher, so I can help them. That's not an issue. Recruiting is fun. You're able to build relationships with other high school and AAU coaches and be on the road and see your peers. So that's not really it. Practice is fun. Game planning is fun. So I enjoy it all, to be honest. You know, the only thing that makes it unenjoyable is when you have the wrong people in your locker room who don't enjoy the process or who don't work hard. But when you have the right guys, I mean, I don't think there's a part of the job that I would avoid at all.
And final question, coming off a championship season, how excited are you for the upcoming campaign?
Yeah, I'm super excited. I mean, you know, you go from being hungry when you're seeking your first championship to becoming greedy to some degree, right? You want to continue to win more and sustain and even exceed that level of success. So our guys are in the weight room. They're probably in the weight room now as we speak with our strength coach. So they've been working really hard to try and build on that. And again, we talked about resisting comfort. That's been our mindset since the season ended. And I think as long as we continue to have that type of mindset, you know, we'll be able to continue this level of success.
Mohamedou Kaba, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Division III Delaware Valley University head men's basketball coach Mohamedou Kaba for coming in studio, being our guest this week. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.